our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
You watch your mouth. You watch it. I know where you live, Evan Peterson.
That doesn't scare me in the least.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think you need to suck it up and be a man of the people, Ben Brennis.
Oh my god, be a man of the people, Ben Brennis. I've heard this on like back-to-back podcasts. What is this shit?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
This guy looks like Captain America before he got hit with the radioactive chemicals. He's like 6 foot, 160, pure string bean.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'll be your fearless leader today, Evan Peterson, joined here by the cast of Usual Suspects on the Tuesday show, Mr. Ben Brennis. Ben, how you doing this evening?
I'm tired.
Tired?
Yeah, I'm tired.
Why are you tired?
You know, because doing podcasting is really hard work.
It is, but it's worth it for the fans. I think you need to suck it up and be a man of the people, Ben Brennis.
Oh my god, be a man of the people, Ben Brennis. I've heard this on like back-to-back podcasts. What is this shit?
Well, yeah, you've heard it from the voice of reason around here, Mr. Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how are you doing?
I am just fine. I am also on the tired side, but I'm going to ride a wave of energy from trying to cover some important pre-draft information for our peeps out there.
Yeah, well, somebody's going to have to bring a little bit of energy tonight, I guess. And maybe it's the guest that we've rounded up, a friend with Fantasy Benefit for me last year who joined me on my last outlet. But we got Matt Modica in the house. Matt, how are you doing? Give me a little energy.
I am doing well. I am jacked up on caffeine and DayQuil, so I'm ready to rock.
That's a great combination there. Chuck, you serve those down at the bar?
Absolutely. Not the DayQuils.
Not the DayQuils. Well, Matt, tell us, for those of the people listening who aren't following you on Twitter or reading your work out there, let them know where you can be found, what you're up to, and how you're going to rock their world this baseball offseason.
Oh, great. Check out ctmbaseball.com. I'll be dropping the starting pitcher index next Tuesday, March 7th. On Twitter, it's at ctmbaseball. You can also hear me every Thursday morning on at FNTSY Radio, Old School Fantasy Hour. Every Saturday morning as well on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition from 8 to 10. So there's a couple of different ways to get in touch with me. I do love to tweet, so you can definitely catch me on Twitter.
Yeah, Matt's a man of the people. Ben, why don't you follow his lead there?
Sure.
All right. Well, enough with the small talk, guys. Obviously, follow us all on Twitter. Matt's a great follow. Hit us up. Send us questions. And actually, to start off the show, we have a listener question that came in to our Friends with Fantasy Benefits at gmail.com account. It's from Mike in Roanoke, Virginia, who has a keeper question in an auction league that he's in with mostly Nats fans. He's torn between keeping David Price or Steven Strasburg, asking if your keeper decisions change based on the type of guys you're drafting with or the type of the draft in general. Let's go ahead and toss it to Matt first since he is the guest. We'll defer. Why don't you weigh in on the subject and tell Mike what he should do?
For 2017, I would keep David Price. That said, if it's a league, it's all like Nationals fans, and my squad isn't that good, then I'll probably keep Steven Strasburg. But if I have a chance to win, I always believe in winning. So if I have a chance to win, I'm keeping David Price. I think he has a bounce-back season. I think he's going to get the 200 innings, the 200 strikeouts. And at worst, he's probably like a 350 ERA guy this season. So I'm going David Price.
Ben, I know we've done a little talking David Price this offseason, but if you wanted to comment more on the being loaded with Nats fans, Strasburg in general, tell me what you got.
Well, for me, I do change my keeper decisions based on the type of drafts that I have, just because I'll take into consideration what other people will potentially do when I try to make my keeper decisions. If I really want to try to keep both players, I would really try to think of where I have the best option to actually pick up the player who I end up dropping. In this situation, David Price is definitely the better keeper, although I like Strasburg more for a keeper outlook for going forward if you're looking for more projectable years, just because I think that he still has top-tier upside, and I think that if David Price ends up having another bad season, we could start seeing a downslope in his career, unfortunately. But overall, I think that his best option is going to be keeping David Price and trying to get Steven Strasburg back at some point during the draft and hoping that the injuries will drop his value.
Chuck, your thoughts.
Well, the first thing that happened when I saw this question is I thought, unlike Ben and Matt, obviously, these are the two pitchers in the top 20 that I'm least likely to own a share of. I'm very down on David Price because of his workload and because of being a lefty at Fenway, which is also the reason why, even though I'm not as far down on Chris Sale, I'm not going to own him either. Eduardo Rodriguez, we'll talk about later. He's another lefty trying to pitch in Boston. So I'm not really big on either player. The one thing he doesn't include is he doesn't say if the league is filled with people who like to trade a lot. And if it's a trading league, in this case, since I don't like either player, I would definitely keep Strasburg and hope that he gets off to a 5 or 6 game hot streak and then float his name amongst the other owners and see exactly how much I can rape somebody for somebody who's going to be on the DL in a month anyway. So that's probably, that would be my approach in this situation. I did think, you know, his statement of altering the strategy for the type of draft was really interesting because I play in a bunch of hybrid leagues where we draft a certain amount of players and then auction the rest. And so in that case, you know, when you drop somebody, you think to yourself, well, you know, where's my draft pick? Am I possibly going to get the guy back? Versus this seems like a straight auction. So, you know, what he's said about potentially, you know, getting Strasburg back because of his injury lowering his cost does make a difference. So, I think the answer to his question is yes. I think we all naturally alter our strategy for the type of draft that we're in. But in this particular question, the only pitcher in the top 20 I like less than these guys, and depending on where he's at, is Cole Hamels. So I would try and trade Strasburg after he pitches good for a month.
I think you absolutely hit the nail right on the head talking about Strasburg being bigger trade bait with the fans in the league. The one question I had when I was looking at this was, so do the Nats fans like overvalue him because he's a Nat, or do they like hate him because he's always injured and they're sitting there going, God, he's always hurt and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, do they kind of, you know, piss on him a little bit? But I think Strasburg, and maybe I kind of want to get you guys to chime in on this. If you could wave the magic wand and there were not zero injury concerns, but they were lessened, like, you know, 50% at least, where would Strasburg rank inside your top 20 if you want to go it? Because I think he'd be a top five pitcher if these injury concerns were nothing. And maybe this isn't the year that he blows out. Maybe this is the year that he does even just, you know, hit 180 innings and is amazing. And next year he blows out his elbow and, you know, you're missing out on a year of in redraft leagues of good productivity. Whoever wants to chime in there.
I'll jump in with that. Strasburg at the All-Star break was pitching unbelievably. He had a 31% K rate. Everything was going his way. He was 12-0. I know nobody cares about wins as a something to judge a pitcher on, but still, he was 12-0. He was rolling along, and then that second half, he just wasn't the same. There was injury concerns. If you lessen the injury concerns, to me, he's probably, you know, like you said, top five. If I knew I was getting 200 innings or more, yes, he's a top five pitcher for me.
I echo Matt's sentiments. I don't think there's the issue is certainly not skill with Steven Strasburg. You know, he's one of the most skilled pitchers in the league, and when he's at the top of his game, he's as dominant as anyone in the game. Maybe even Clayton Kershaw when he's really on. So, you know, he would have to go as a top five kind of pitcher. Because, like, a healthier, nasty version of him, although their pitched arsenals aren't the same, is Noah Syndergaard, and he's a top-five pitcher. So, to me, it's pretty obvious that he'd be a top-five guy without injury concerns, but that's a fairyland at this point.
Ben, put a bow on it?
Yeah, I've loved Strasburg for years, and I haven't really cared as much about the injuries. It's not like, for me, whenever he's pitching, he's typically done pretty well, regardless if he has been hurt or not. The only time I ever feel like he's doing terrible is when he's pitching down in Miami. That's the only time I feel like he ever has a terrible game. And basically, if he wasn't hurt, I'd still consider him top five pitcher. I almost consider him a top 10 pitcher, even with the injury concerns. And I just think he's still so good that, with that K rate being able to stay up, if he was able to have an entirely healthy season and be able to be good for the entire stretch of the season, you'll have a lot of people who will be jumping the gun and trying to get him as like a number three pitcher the following season. So,
absolutely. Well, thanks for sending in the question, Mike. We look forward to answering more listener questions. Send them on in, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. If you want it answered by a certain day's podcast, you can put that in the subject line, or else we'll kind of spread them out as we see fit. But let's jump into these reclamation pairs that Chuck has presented to us. And we're going to take a look at pairs of guys and kind of do a which would you rather have at their draft value. And we're jumping a little bit down the draft board here, so hold on to your hats, kids. First pairing we have here pits Shelby Miller against Ivan Nova. Matt, once again, let's defer to you, and why don't you tell me what you like or don't like about these guys?
Okay, let's start with Shelby Miller. The biggest thing for me last year, besides just a god-awful season, but the biggest thing that stood out was his two-seamer. He went from throwing it 23% of the time to just about 5% of the time. Why that was, I do not have the answer. But with that, by doing that, his ground ball percentage, which was like 48% in 2015, went down to 42%. The home run to fly ball percent, you could say, yes, it's just a normal correction. But it went from 6.5% to 11.5%. And the hard hit percent jumped up over 9%. So, I mean, it was just everything in one. Everything went wrong. Maybe the ballpark played a little with his mind, but why he stopped throwing the two-seam pitch, I don't have that answer. Ivan Nova, I'm going to go with him. When he got to Pittsburgh, from what I heard, they told him he needed to pound the zone. He pounded the zone. Over 52% ground ball percentage. And he's a guy that has impeccable control. So that's another thing you like to see. The thing with Nova, he's back in PNC. That's an added boost to his value. Is he going to be the same pitcher over those 11 or 12 starts he had last year with Pittsburgh? I don't see him as a 3 ERA guy, but I see him as maybe like a 370 everything goes right, possibly 350 in a perfect world. So I'm going to take the shot on Ivan Nova. But I do think Shelby Miller can't be worse than he was last year, and he will be given every opportunity.
Real quick, let's go to Ben. Ben.
Personally, I'm a big Ivan Nova fan just because he is in Pittsburgh. And it's not that I'm an anti-Shelby Miller fan. I just think that pitching in Arizona is just terrible. We saw Greinke have a bad season there. We've seen other pitchers in the last bunch of years just not be able to pitch well. The only pitcher who's in Arizona really that I like is Robbie Ray. And that's just for the fact that he just has so much potential to add on to that K rate and to actually become such a good pitcher. Greinke's a good pitcher in and of itself, but I can't trust him. I can't trust Shelby Miller this year. Not that I can trust Ivan Nova, but I trust the Pirates and their system more than I trust the Diamondbacks and their system.
Chuck, you know you're next.
Well, you know, I'm going to point to a lot of what those guys said, what, you know, our friends said here, because I take a really close look at how a player is moved. And not only did Shelby Miller go from, you know, a pitching park in Atlanta where he had very little pressure, then he gets part of this big trade that brings Dansby Swanson back amongst other players, you know, pitching prospects, etc., in this huge trade that is largely panned. And so I think not only did he go to a harder place to pitch, but then all of a sudden there was a lot of pressure on him where he hadn't had pressure before. And I knew it was going to go one way or the other. I knew it was going to be really good or really bad. And it was rock bottom bad. So I do think he bounces back to a certain extent, because I can't imagine he's broke for good at age 26, even though his various stat lines throughout his career are literally like a carnival ride. They're all over the place, you know. 9 Ks per 9 to 5 Ks per 9 to 7. I mean, all his numbers are all over the board. So you're not really sure what you're getting. But he is going far enough into drafts that I don't hate his value. But I will also look at how Ivan Nova has moved, meaning he's gone from the AL East to Pittsburgh where he thrived, and now he's back in Pittsburgh, you know, by his choice. So it seems like he's really comfortable there. He had a 1.1 whip as a Pirate last year, and he had 7.24 Ks per 9. Those are both very good numbers for him, for what his profile has been. He's comfortable. He's not in a pressure situation. I would take Ivan Nova, even though he's 4 years older than Shelby Miller, because he's 30. I'd still take Ivan Nova as well.
Well, the one thing that I don't think you mentioned as his numbers as a Pirate were the 3 walks that he had in 64 and two-thirds innings after he came over to Pittsburgh last year. You compare that to the 25 walks that he had in 97 and a third as a Yankee going from AL to NL. I mean, these are all, you know, good things. And Shelby Miller, you're talking about a guy whose mechanics were so bad that he was having problems keeping his knuckles out of the dirt on his follow through. And while I don't think he's completely going to be washed out of the league this year, and you know, the only place for him to go is up, I think Nova is the guy of this pairing that I would definitely be more interested in, regardless of how far Shelby Miller tumbles down draft boards. A couple guys who are rising up draft boards, at least one of these guys that I've seen in some spots, Zach Davies versus Robert Gieselman. I don't want to get nasty with it, but I believe that's how we say it. Ben, give me a little name pronunciation lesson there.
You're correct. It's Gieselman.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about your boy there?
Yeah. I can't guarantee that he's going to have a rotation spot this year because of how deep the Mets pitching staff is, but it looks like he's currently battling it out with Zach Wheeler for the fifth spot in that rotation, and he has a very good chance to get it. He came up at the end of last year, and he gave the Mets a much-needed presence, and due to the fact that he just played so well down the stretch, he basically averaged a strikeout per inning. He didn't have a great whip because he ended up walking 15 people in 44 innings, which is not great at all. But he was able to strand runners, which was good. He had a 2.42 ERA, and he gave the Mets a much-needed boost, and that was basically pitching as their number 3. When he's going up as the number 5, he's just going to have that much better of a chance to get some wins. He'll still get quality starts, and he has a more improved Mets lineup around him because they'll have Neil Walker back, they'll have Lucas Duda back, and if he does lock up that fifth spot in the rotation, he's going to be a really good back end draftable player.
And I guess we'll go to Chuck to expound on Zach Davies and this pair, Chuck.
Because I'm a Brewer fan, you think I'm going to jump all over this, huh? Well, Zach Davies is only 24 years old. He came to the Brewers and for just a rental of Gerardo Parra for a stretch drive for the Orioles. He's a 4-pitch control guy. He had a huge jump in his fly ball percentage of over 10% last year, which really scares me in Miller Park. So, you know, Robert Gieselman is somebody that I think if the biggest – obstacle in your way is an injury to a Mets pitcher, I feel like that's a pretty overcomable thing in front of you. I think that's not much of an obstacle. That's pretty much going to happen. You know, Wheeler, is. There's been questions about if he was going to be back and ready, you know, this whole offseason. And Lord knows that almost every member of their staff has been struggling with their health in recent years. Steven Matz is made of porcelain. So as far as I'm concerned, I think Gisselman is the right way to go here for sure.
Matt, what do you think?
I'm going to go with Zach Davies. The Mets fan that I am, I do like Gisselman a lot. I actually bought both of these guys last week in my auction at the end of it. Zach Davies, from June 1st on, he was a different pitcher. In his last 20 starts, I mean, as Chuck mentioned, control artist, 1.7 walks per nine. And even his K rate wasn't that bad. It was 7.8. So, I mean, that's a nice little thing right there. The ground ball rate was 45% over those last 120 innings. He's going to pitch. He's in the Brewers rotation. He's one of the guys that's going to get the ball every fifth day. They want to see what they have in him. I like him as a back-of-the-end guy. Gisselman, I really like what he did for the Mets at the end of last year. And as Chuck said very eloquently, Matz, who I love, is made of porcelain. He's been hurt at every level. Zach Wheeler is already having problems. Who knows when and if he's going to pitch. So Gisselman should get a shot. I'm going to take the guy that has the spot right now, but do like both arms.
Yeah, it's really interesting concept. And real quick, I'm not going to put any outlet on blast, but I received a magazine recently, and they had Zach Davies as their 45th overall starting pitcher, and I just kind of scratched my head, and then I got really angry, and then I asked literally everybody I knew why the hell this was happening. And he's a guy in the mold of, like, a Kyle Hendricks, and I wonder if Hendricks didn't have the success that he did last year, if we would care as much about Zach Davies. This guy looks like Captain America before he got hit with the radioactive chemicals. He's like 6 foot 160, pure string bean, not very intimidating on the mound. And I was reading somewhere I think Baseball Prospectus had a list. It was called Strikes Above Average, basically comparing where you are to the pack on getting called strikes. And he led the majors with a 3.5%, which was, I believe, at least half a percentage point above even the number two guy. But he doesn't really have an overpowering fastball. I just worry that if things are to regress in that department, that we may see kind of the whatever the floor is for Davies drop out here. And as far as Gisselman, or however the hell you want to say his name, I was reading last year he was playing with a shoulder injury in his non-throwing shoulder. It was affecting how he was swinging the bat, and I know that that's not what matters in fantasy, but I was just wondering that even having that discomfort in his shoulder, if it might be throwing him off. I've seen his competition is Seth Lugo, and I think he should beat him out for a rotation spot pretty easily. And yeah, these Mets pitchers are all going to fall apart here very quickly. Sorry, Ben, to break
you watch your mouth. You watch it. I know where you live, Evan Peterson.
That doesn't scare me in the least. let's go on down to the next pairing here. A couple of guys that I think are pretty interesting this year, actually. Wiley Willie. I don't even know. Peralta, I can say that.
Willie Peralta.
Willie Peralta of Milwaukee Brewers fame.
You're almost as bad as Justin Mason with pronouncing names.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'll be a Justin Mason caliber. And Daniel Norris. And we'll start with Matt here because he is the brains of this operation.
I'm going to say Daniel Norris. Surprisingly enough, though, both of these two pitchers, their last 10 game starts, they both kind of shined. Willie Peralta has been the guy with the 95-mile-an-hour fastball that it never came to fruition. Maybe he does end up in the Brewers' bullpen at some point and becomes a shutdown reliever. We'll see about that. But Daniel Norris, to me, is a former high pick. prospect that people like. His problem is staying healthy as well, but he had just under nine per K in his last 56 innings. Detroit needs him to step it up. I'm going to go with the young kid, Peralta. It was a nice stretch run late. If you want to take a flyer at the end, I don't blame you. But I think he ends up in the bullpen, bottom line. It's Daniel Norris for me.
Chuck, you think Peralta's headed for the bullpen here?
Well, in a lot of situations, I think he could be headed to the bullpen. I just don't think that the Brewers have enough pitching depth to make that happen. It probably is the right place for him. You know, adding to what Matt mentioned, he had a 2.92 ERA after the All-Star break last year and 51 strikeouts in 62 innings pitched. You know, for a guy, when you look at his overall career, you'd say, you know, he's probably like a mid-four kind of guy with 7 Ks per nine. Is kind of, if you look at his numbers, you project that as kind of his ceiling. But the second half of last year, he was really quite good, and he was even better before September than he was in September. So I'm holding out some hope for a rebound for Willie Peralta for sure. But that being said, I was all over Daniel Norris last year. I thought, I believe it was a cancer scare 2 years ago or what have you. But for whatever reason, he missed some time and he really fell off people's radars 2 years ago. And this past year, he seems like he got a little unlucky. He gave up a 327 BABIP. I think he projects more like a 3 ERA guy with, you know, 8.5 sort of Ks per nine. And the thing that really got unlucky with him is he gave up a much higher home run rate than any of the projection systems are projecting for him this year. With the ballpark that he plays in and playing on the better team, I'm going to go Daniel Norris, but I would love to have both of these guys on a team if I could get them around where they're going in drafts.
Ben, would you be trying to land both of these guys?
I mean, not personally, just I'm not really a big fan of either, but if I had to pick one, I would pick Daniel Norris. I think that he has more upside. I know that Peralta's had some decent seasons, but I don't see him being able to have another good season in it. And I know that he made some improvements, but I think that Daniel Norris is a player that's really going to have to step up this year, just like we were talking about earlier. Detroit can't be as bad as the other bad teams in that division. So as a result, they're actually going to probably end up competing, even though they're trying to rebuild, because half of that division is just terrible. And I still think that he's the type of guy who can average close to, if not a strikeout per inning. I think he can end up having a low ERA. I think that he just has to really cut down on those hits and those walks. And I think that he's going to be able to address that the more comfortable he gets pitching in the big leagues. And I think that he will probably end up learning a little bit from Justin Verlander. And I think that Detroit overall is going to really put a lot of time into working with him and fixing his mechanics and trying to get the pitches that he's comfortable with. And as a result of that, I think he's going to be the one who have the better season.
Can I jump in 1 second with Daniel Norris? One other thing I wanted to mention. There's two numbers I look at, and when I see that, they kind of pop to me. In those last 10 game starts, he had a 65.8 first pitch strike and 11.1 swinging strike rate. Anytime I see 65% or higher and 11% or higher combination, that always makes me kind of drool a little. So I just wanted to drop that little one in there.
And I guess I'm not done interjecting either, because the one thing we haven't mentioned is that Daniel Norris is basically 5 years younger than Willie Peralta when we're comparing these two pitchers. So obviously people in long-term leagues or looking to have, you know, keeper potential going forward, obviously Daniel Norris is quite a bit better in that area too.
Ben, anything to interject?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, yeah, I really don't have much to say on this subject. I love Daniel Norris. I love the strikeout potential, and I think as he, you know, gets some more innings under his belt, I think you're going to see him mature as a player. And Peralta, I think pretty much the exact opposite of, so we can just kind of keep moving. To Braves talk, What's up, Chuck? Mike Foltynewicz and Jarrell Cotton. Tell me what you like about my boy Folty.
Well, if that's directed at me, I would have to say, you know, he made some dramatic strides last year. He went all the way down to a 1.3 whip, which, you know, is something that, you know, isn't something that people say regularly. But that was a huge step forward to him for sure. You know, the other thing I noticed is that it seems like he's a short start kind of guy in general. Like he has a hard time pitching deep into games. And boy, when you look at how his pitching results go the further he gets into a game, he gives up a 340 on base percentage after pitch 46. So he's just a completely different guy as the game unfolds. And, you know, while I haven't watched enough of his starts, I've only seen him sort of when he pitched against the Brewers. I'm hoping that our man Evan can expound on that even further. But he made such a dramatic step. He got his ERA into the fours, and he got his whip down close to playable last year. And everybody's always loved his arm. So maybe he's somebody that people can wrongfully overlook if they think that he's never going to come around, because he made some pretty dramatic strides. That being said, I don't even have to start expounding on Jarrell Cotton, because I think everyone else on the panel is going to be very effusive about how much they enjoy Jarrell Cotton. I just want to mention that he had a 1.44 September ERA last year, and his worst two starts were on the road. He only had six, and the two starts that were on the road were not very good. So that'll tell you how much he's enjoying O.co and their septic problems that come from Billy Bean's office. So we'll go from there.
Of course, you were going to bring up Billy Bean. I'll expound just real quick on Foltynewicz, and I think if you're taking a look at the steps that he made last year, you look at his first time through the order numbers. In 2015, he had a 1.72 whip. In 2016, he had a 1.13 whip the first time through the batting order. I get what you're saying about him being a short start guy, and that's why a lot of people like him as a long reliever later down the road, which I do kind of see that path for him, but I'm not sure how I feel about, you know, 42-year-old Bartolo Colon, Jaime Garcia, who's an injury risk, R.A. Dickey, even though he, you know, can't tear his UCL and whatever, he's going to throw a bunch of innings. Like, there's old guys on this team, and he's going to need to throw some innings. As far as Cotton's concerned, yeah, he's catching a ton of helium around fantasy circles this year. The changeup is ridiculous. And if you're looking at the news that he, quote, might be fighting for a fourth rotation spot, if he screws that up, at least he'll probably get the fifth one. Like, you're going to see this guy in the majors. So I wouldn't worry about any of that talk if you've been hearing any of that. Matt, what do you like about these guys?
I like actually both of them a lot. Guest you guys had on last week, the friends with Fantasy Benefits, Nando Delfino, asked me to write the starting pitcher thing. There was an AP kit they were putting together for the Associated Press. And Jarrell Cotton and Mike Foltynewicz were my AL and NL deep sleepers. So I definitely like both guys. Cotton, as Chuck was mentioning, he seems to be everybody's late trendy guy. He had the 66.1 first pitch strike percentage, 12.5 swinging percentage, 0.82 whip. I mean, those things for a young kid just popped to me. And Foltynewicz throws mid-90s, former first-round pick. I believe he was like 19th overall. Everybody has always loved the arm. And as you mentioned, is it a bullpen guy? Is it fifth starter? He's going to get the opportunity, as I've mentioned, in Atlanta. I kind of like what the Braves are doing. Instead of having guys like Aaron Blair and John Gant pitching for them, they got some very old guys, but guys who can pitch and help with the young members of that staff, grooming them to only get better. Foltynewicz has the control. He throws first pitch strikes. The swinging percentage is 10%. I think that can improve. Don't know how the new Braves field is going to play. I would assume maybe a tad pitcher friendly, but we'll see. But Foltynewicz is an arm that I'm willing to take a shot on late in drafts.
Ben, is Jarrell Cotton 75 picks better than Fulton Evich, or how do you feel?
I mean, I'm a big Cotton fan. I'm trying to get him in a lot of dynasty leagues, actually, because I had a lot of hope for him when he was in L.A., and then when he got traded, I was like, well, this is going to be a good opportunity for him, and I think that he has a ton of potential. I'm not sure if a I'm not sure if he's able to average a K per inning, but I do think that he's going to be able to have a decent ERA and decent WHIP totals, not as good as it was last year. But the other reason I prefer Cotton is more because I think Fulton Evich is more of a late inning relief type guy. I think he has the makings of a closer more than an actual starter, mainly because of exactly what Chuck was saying. He just seems to do better in short bursts than he does in long innings. And it's been this way for a few seasons that I feel the transition that he needs to make is into the bullpen, because I think that if he has late inning stuff with those pitches that he has, I think he'd be able to be a very good reliever rather than a starter.
Absolutely. And the last pairing of names, a couple other guys who I think are really intriguing late in drafts, Eduardo Rodriguez out there in Boston, and Drew Hutchison, who is going to be pitching in, hopefully pitching in Pittsburgh this year if he makes the rotation. Chuck got us started thinking about lefties and Fenway, so I'll go ahead and toss it to him first.
Well, Eduardo Rodriguez gave up a lot of home runs last year, and like I mentioned, he's only 23 years old. I have some serious questions about lefties pitching in Boston, at first, when you think about why lefties struggle at Boston, the first thing that you think of is, well, actually the gap in right field is actually very deep in Fenway, despite the fact that the pesky pole and the odd-shaped corner that we see in play in the playoffs so regularly. But I think that the monster is what hurts lefties so much there, because when you try to pitch away or you fool people and they get the ball up in the air to left field, I think that's kind of what plays against lefties being in Boston. He just doesn't appear like he has quite enough stuff yet to me to succeed and overcome the challenges of the AL East. And this is the oddest pairing of the bunch for me, because I really don't have any more faith in Drew Hutchison. So I would probably still take Eduardo Rodriguez, because he's 3 years younger and what have you. And I'll just say this about Hutchison. Surprisingly enough, his FIPs have been even worse than his ERAs, like everywhere. And I know everyone believes in Ray Searidge, but then again, last year you're talking about a guy who gave up 2.5 walks and 2.5 home runs per nine in AAA last year. So if I had to take a gamble on somebody, I'd take it on Eduardo Rodriguez, because at least he gets that excellent run support, despite the fact that I think it's a tough road. It's a tough road for lefties in Fenway to me.
It's one of Chuck's life lessons for you kids out there, so take heed, write it down somewhere. Ben, how do you feel about this pairing? It is a weird pairing.
It is a weird pairing, mainly because I don't like either of them. I can't even guarantee that Eduardo Rodriguez is actually going to have a rotation spot, and I believe he will, but I can't guarantee it. And I still want to pick him over Hutchison. And I'm a real big fan of Searidge, but I can't get behind Hutchison whatsoever in this situation. So I think for me, I got to go Eduardo Rodriguez, because the Red Sox just do provide so much offensive firepower that if you're in a wins league, he'll be able to provide you wins. He still gets a ton of strikeouts. The ratio numbers aren't going to be pretty, but he has the ability to improve on those a lot more than Hutchison, I feel, mainly just because he has other pitchers that he can work with. He can work with David Price. He can work with Chris Sale. He can work with Rick Porcello. They have the opportunity and the personnel there to be able to help improve how his mechanics are, help improve how his pitch selection is. I feel, because of all that he makes a better option, but neither of these two are players that I'm really looking to acquire, if at all.
Matt, how about you on this pairing?
I'm going to say that I am a big fan of Eduardo Rodriguez. I wasn't initially until I did all my deep dive and my research this year. And he's a guy you have to break down pre-All-Star break when he got sent back down. Post-All-Star break, totally different pitcher. I believe they said he was tipping some pitches. They worked on some mechanics. Post-All-Star break, 14 game starts, 3.24 ERA, 3.48 FIP, 9.15 K9. The walks per nine were over three, but the whip corrected. It was 1.13 whip in the second half, 11.7 swing and strike percentage. He's a guy that, through my research, I'm liking. I'm taking a shot on late. And I think he is going to get a chance in that rotation. I don't know what's going to wind up happening. Does Pomerantz go to the bullpen? Do they hold Eduardo Rodriguez back a little? But it's a long season. At some point, he's getting in there. And he's a guy that I would target as a late sleeper. Hutchinson is a guy I'll probably die on a hill somewhere. Waiting for this guy to ever turn into anything. But the chances now. PNC Park, the Pirates and their reclamation projects. Supposedly, he's got the inside track for the fifth spot. He's a guy in draft and hold leagues. I take him like the mid-30s every time I do one. Just for that chance that it does all come together. Whether Ray Searidge or somebody else in that organization has some magic fairy dust that they sprinkle on him. But between the two of them, it's Eduardo Rodriguez right now, and that's where I'm going with.
Yeah, you look at the Pirates rotation as Roster Resource has it right now. So obviously you have Garrett Cole. You got Jameson Taillon. They have Chad Kuhl in the third spot, which doesn't mean he's going to pitch in the third spot, but Ivan Nova and then Drew Hutchison. So he's going to get some run here as far as AL to NL. I mean, I don't think there's much that needs to be expounded on that. And I don't care if you think Andrew McCutcheon's old or whatever. I still think they're going to play a lot better defense out there in PNC than they possibly would out in Toronto. As far as Eduardo Rodriguez is concerned, I think, like Matt was saying, Pomerantz getting shipped off to the bullpen or something else. I really do like what Erod brings to the table. You look at his second time through the order stats. Last year, he was struggling to make the adjustment the second time through, gave up a 298 average against batters. Last year, he cut that down to a 234. So I think it's something, once again, he doesn't have a ton of innings under his belt at the major league level by any stretch of the imagination. He's got 228 innings. So I think this is another guy that could learn to pitch a little bit better and probably come out a little bit closer ERA-wise, what he was in 2015, but a little more strikeout-wise, what he was in 2016. That brings us to the end of our pairings here. Is there any final thoughts that you guys have to kind of close anything out? Any topics you want to discuss?
I'm just excited that we're about a month away from the real draft season. That last weekend and the last two weekends, and the weekend in March, and then the weekend in April. So I'm all geeked up for that.
Well, I guess since we have a couple minutes that we don't usually have, at times we like to give people a peek into our baseball geek club. And today we were having a debate about what was going to happen with the Nats bullpen. And, you know, I think closer information is something that listeners always like to hear. But recently they announced a three-man race for the closer job with the two prominent names of the three being Blake Treinen and Sean Kelly. So, you know, I just took a late gamble on Blake Treinen and ticked off Justin Mason since we're in the same NFBC league. So, Matt, do you have any input or any thoughts on what's going to happen in that Nats bullpen? The question that was going on was how likely it was that the save leader for the Nats is not on their roster right now. So if you could expound on those, I imagine.
I do believe the Nats make a trade, get a proven closer. Sean Kelly has the skills to succeed, even though in his brief try with the ninth inning last year, That did not go well, but everything else, he pitched very well last year. He, to me, he's a perfect seventh, eighth inning guy. He's had two Tommy John surgeries, so he's not a guy you could just rely on for help. Blake Treinen, I like as well. The other kid I heard on a show, they had a Washington Nationals beat reporter on. The kid's name escapes my mind right now, but he's a dark horse guy to look at. Sorry, I can't remember his name.
Is it Coda Glover?
Yeah, I'm sorry?
Coda Glover?
Something like that. Something like that.
He's one of their minor league relief pitcher prospects.
And the beat writer was mentioning him and pretty high on him. Like I said, for the interim, if I had to choose, it's Sean Kelly for me. Skills are there. He's an effective reliever. But I think the Nats, no, they need to win now. They need a proven arm in that bullpen. So is the guy that will lead the team is not on the roster currently.
Ben, what say you on this topic?
I mean, I'm a big Sean Kelly fan overall. I just think that he has the best stuff. And I think that because he has the best stuff right now that's on the roster, I think that he deserves to be able to be the closer as a result. Now, he doesn't have the closer makeup necessarily, but he has the best ability to get strikeouts. He has the best ability to keep the ERA low and keep points off the scoreboard, keep runs off the scoreboard, which is the biggest thing as a closer. And while I don't think that he's going to be a great long-term closer, he probably won't even close the entire season, I think that he's the one who gets the first go at it, considering that when they had the opportunity last year, after they got rid of Papelbon, they did use Sean Kelly. And while he didn't do great, he at least was somewhat successful, and they didn't even give Blake Treinen a try at any point during the season. So I think that as a result of that, it's probably going to end up being Sean Kelly as a result. But I do think that they will make a trade at some point because they're just not going to be happy with him the entire season. And it really depends who's on the free agent market. They could end up trading for, I think Tony Watson's going to end up being a free agent at the end of the season. So he could be a player that comes in. So they could do another trade with Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Dusty Baker made an interesting comment about a month ago or so on Blake Treinen, saying that he was too nice of a guy to be a closer, but that's just Dusty being Dusty.
Well, I mean, they don't have to be assholes like Jonathan Papelbon, do they?
And actually, the original reason that Treinen was on my radar was that I had heard some in-depth analysis from Eno Saris and Paul Sporer and some of the other guys that really focus on pitching, talking about how Treinen stuff far outpitched what his numbers were last year, and that they saw a lot of room for upward growth for him. But it is always interesting to try and figure out what the teams are going to do because, you know, I think David Robertson as an in-season trade guy is the guy that everyone is assuming is going to get traded. But there's been so much talk about it, and the White Sox haven't traded him yet. So, but there's been a lot of talk about the White Sox and the Nats going back and forth and why Robertson wasn't included in the big trade that happened already. So I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch unfold as the season goes on here in Washington because, you know, it's an older team loaded at every position, basically, and their window is closing, and they don't want to screw it up when you can pick up a closer and that bumps everybody back into a position where it looks like they fit better and they're more comfortable. So I definitely see all the opinions that we're showing here, that's for sure.
Yeah, speaking of David Robertson, I've been buying Nate Jones late in drafts as well because he will be closing at some point for the White Sox.
Yeah, I like Jones as a late name. Real quick on training, when you're talking about his stuff, you're not talking about the 11% walk rate, are you? Because that's pretty disgusting. But yeah, he lowered his batting average, which was .252. Our batting average against .252 in 2015 to a .220 in 2016. So maybe there's something, and maybe he can repeat that 84% left on base percentage. That's why we're here, sports fans. Real quick, I didn't get to hop on my soapbox at the beginning of the year. but or beginning of the podcast, I have this idea, and I'm taking it off the rails real quick, but I don't know how hard it is to code things or program. That's not the part of the brain that I was born with. But for those of you that love MLB TV as much as I do, I believe that somebody needs to sit down and create a database where every at-bat is logged by batter and pitcher, and then you can go in and look. And so, like, if you wanted to watch Jarrell Cotton starts, you would just go into this little database, you'd type his name in, you'd click him, and all of his starts would come up. I'd pay buku bucks for this, and I don't care who creates it. I don't care if I become a millionaire or somebody else becomes a millionaire. This is something I need in my life.
That sounds really good. I'm with you on that. But I'd like to be the millionaire that creates it.
Hey, I'll go 50-50 with you. If you got the brains, I got the charisma, question mark. if you believe in this idea, leave us a 5-star review, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, sign our petition, if you will, and let's get that out there and make all of our lives a better place, and make your world a better place by following Matt Modique on Twitter. Matt, it was a pleasure having you on today. Remind everybody where you can be found, where we can find your work, and what you'll be up to.
Sure. At CTM Baseball on Twitter, ctmbaseball.com. Next Tuesday, March 7th, I'll be dropping the starting pitcher index. And you can also catch me Thursday mornings and Saturday mornings on FNTSY Radio. And thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we thank you for your time, and we'll definitely work to try and get you on in season here. Chuck, why don't you let everybody know where you can be found, what you're working on as we're building towards draft season here?
Well, I'm doing I'm trying to qualify and reiterate some of the basic draft strategies and put together a piece that we're going to have up on the site, and then rate the strategies and how I find them to be successful. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, and I just want to say that Matt Modica is easily one of my favorite follows. I doubt there's anybody I follow on Twitter that I look for more for the kind of stats that he comes up with, and the way that he shares things on Twitter and he interacts with people. He might be my favorite follow of everybody that I follow on Twitter. So if you are not following Matt Modica, and you're a baseball fan, you are definitely missing out.
Yeah, that's
our words, Chuck.
Yeah, that's how I got hooked up with Matt. He was tweeting about what was it, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Lala 94.
Oh yeah, that's way back. Not Lala. That was at Jones Beach. That was a great one.
Yeah, we talked about that the last time we were together. So yeah, he's got plenty of stuff he's talking about, not just the great baseball stats, but just a great guy all the way around. And another great guy, even though I kind of give him the business, Ben Brennis. Tell the folks what you'll be up to besides editing this podcast later.
Well, I'm also the host of our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast, so give that a listen, and we're trying to build up the fan base there. Outside of that, I'm basically just working on ranks for baseball, and I will be doing some writing this year. I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb, and when I am not podcasting, Evan and I are feuding on Twitter, which I'm still waiting for Evan to actually throw the first blow, but I guess he's got a little scared that he's going to lose a Twitter war.
Oh, is that what it is? I think you just want me to throw the first punch so you can claim self-defense when you go nuts. But
I don't know how to start a Twitter feud. I'm not, unless we're turning into like JaVale McGee and Shaq. Like, I really don't know what else to do. I guess I could bring up the Falcons blowing
you.
The Super Bowl, I guess.
Okay, well, we had to go there and ruin my evening. I was going to say, I thought the nerdiest thing about us was doing a fantasy baseball podcast, but obviously it'll be Googling how to start a Twitter feud. That's what I'll be doing this evening, at least. You can find me trolling on Twitter at EasyEv3. Make sure to send us your questions so we can get those answered. Make sure to send us your reviews. Make sure to just send us all your love and positive thoughts as we continue to drop knowledge on you all fantasy baseball offseason and throughout the regular season as well. Get ready. It's coming. For all of us here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a wonderful offseason. Thank you.
Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till